The views expressed on this program are those of the individual participants and not necessarily those of WVUD or the University of Delaware. Welcome to WVUD's Campus Voices, weekly conversations with interesting members of the university community, visitors to campus, and others engaged in thought-provoking research and community service. Stay tuned for Campus Voices on WVUD.
Good morning. You're listening to Campus Voices on WVUD. I'm Ryan Thornton.
And I'm Sam O'Donnell. Today, we're sitting down with Professor Steve Mortensen, communications professor specializing in interpersonal communications.
Good morning, Professor Mortensen.
Good morning.
So we were browsing through your UD faculty page before the interview, and we found the statement that studying communication can help people author their own definitions of a meaningful life and a sense of self. Mm-hmm. Can you describe what that means?
Sure. There's a phrase that I like, and it says, as we communicate, so shall we be. And the way that we talk, the way the stories that we tell about ourselves, those become in a large part who we are. There's another metaphor that I use a lot in my classes that the students struggle with, but then once they get it, it makes a lot of sense. And that's that mind is internalized culture and culture is externalized mind. And so I'm always kind of walking around in my mind. And when I hear people's conversations, that's my mind. The coin that those two things are made up of is language and culture. And so when a student starts to realize they can choose from cultural meanings and embody certain things the way they want to, the way they want to be a man, the way they want to be a woman, how masculine, how feminine they want to be, how they want to explore and express their sexual orientation and identity, we have a great deal of freedom in this culture to do that. But it takes a little bit of insight to realize that culture is arbitrary. It's sort of like a huge store, and we can pick all these different meanings for ourselves. And then sometimes people will do the hard work of saying, well, I want to create a new meaning. I want to create a new way of making music. I want to create a new way of making money. I want to create a new way of being with other people. And so they slowly develop those new choices for themselves. As we're growing up, we end up sort of taking those meanings for granted as sort of the way it is or as a natural way of being. But as we get older, we start looking at different options for ourselves within our culture. And I think at the highest level of freedom, when I can start to define what a successful life is on my own terms, then I'm really free. I ask my students quite often, what's your definition of freedom? Did you choose it, or was this the definition that was given to you? What's your definition of a meaningful career or a happy marriage? Because a lot of times we answer these questions before we even ask them. I'll ask somebody, what do you want out of life? And they'll say, oh, I want to have a good job. Well, what's your definition of a good job? For some people, it has to do with money. For some people, it has to do with making meaning. For some people, it has to do with having free time and the ability to sort of engineer your own career and create it. I think one of the great things in the comm department is that we help our students hone their strengths so that they sort of develop their own careers around the things that they're good at and are naturally inclined toward. I think that when students realize they have more choices that they can make, that they can develop ways of being themselves that are based on them, it helps them author their own lives instead of being a character in somebody else's story.
So again, you study how human reality is constructed,
mm-hmm.
and you think that that's more beneficial to the students.
It's important to be able to look at culture as almost like a stock of meanings, and then you choose the ones that make the most sense for you. Now, for many people, the farthest they go in life is they become a perfect representation of their community or how they were raised. Like if you think about the towns that you come from, like people from that town, they're just so that town. But they're not really individuals, they're not really making choices. So at a certain point, we begin to realize that culture is arbitrary, and then we can start interrogating it. Is this the way I want to raise my family? You know, for example, with my own family, my wife's an incredibly talented artist. She was a graphic designer in Hollywood. She could easily make more money than I could. She's a very emancipated modern woman. She wanted to stay home. She wanted to stay home. She wanted to stay home and be there for our kids. She wanted to raise our kids. And when I'm done with work, I go home. I go home and hang out with my boys and play Halo or Star Wars or whatever they're obsessing about, or talk about Lego creations. And they're teenagers. And, you know, most teenagers feel their parents have become toxic and they don't want to be around them. But in our house, we're very tight like that. They're not obsessed with phones. They don't have a Facebook account. When commercials come on television, we mute them. The media hasn't decided what the world is for them. They get to choose what's interesting for themselves. So we have a very tight family. Now, at the same time, we have friends who have double incomes. And, you know, they're going off to Cancun, they're going off and doing this and that, and they're saying, you know, would you like to come with? And we're like, no, we can't afford that because we made this choice. So we chose, instead of the money and the double income, we chose that tight-knit family. And now we're really reaping the benefits of that. I have a daughter, too, who's a sophomore at Duquesne. And the way we raised them was to express themselves, to follow what they want to do. And we would encourage them, you know, to be open with their feelings. You know, my one son, he likes to come in for a hug. He's not shy about that. And so we've made it so that when they're at home, one of the things they never do, like, they just don't rag on each other. They're not cruel to each other. They're not allowed, because our attitude is like, look, life will do that all on its own. When you go outside, when you go out of the house, nobody's got your back. But here, no one's going to be cruel to you. No one's going to do that. So we've created our own culture. We've created our own vision for our family, and we've made choices that have had financial consequences, but we're reaping the benefits emotionally of being able to do all these things. So I think, you know, that's what, when you're in charge of your life, when you have your marriage and you have your kids or you're running your business, you can begin to create your own culture. And the question is, okay, how do I want to do that? What sorts of choices and decisions do I want to make? So when I'm teaching my big lecture class, they're sort of like, we study human nature and we study human culture, but then we also study human choice. We go into philosophies like existentialism, and I think sometimes it's very daunting to the students. They're like, I didn't know I had, you know, this level of choice. Like, you know, you get up this morning and go drain your bank account and go get a plane ticket or a car and just leave. You'd break a lot of hearts. You'd disappoint a lot of people, but you can do that. Like, every morning you can decide whether or not to do that. All of us can. Like, I can't because I've still got minors. So if I leave, the police are coming after me. But you guys can do that. So it's intimidating to step up to the level of choice making you actually have, but it's also emancipating. So one of the things that I'm always drilling in my students' heads is that you can't always choose your circumstances, but you can always choose your response to them. You know, for example, if I end up being accused wrongly of a crime, and I have to go to jail, and there's nothing I can do about it. I have to go to jail, but how do I go to jail? What do I do when I get there? Do I help out my inmates? Do I just stay in my room? What do I do with loss? What do I do with grief? Do I become bitter, or do I try to turn that into acceptance and wisdom? So it's daunting, but it's also very emancipating.
Yeah, this is Campus Voices. We're talking to Professor Steve Mortensen from the Communication Department, and we're talking about how our individual realities are shaped by the way we communicate socially. When you're a freshman in college and you come into the comm department, you're one of the first professors that you're going to see, and you're confronted with a lot of these communication theories mm-hmm. that make you think about yourself and how your own reality is created. Mm-hmm. As you see your students progress from freshmen to seniors, how do you see their own realities reshaping and how they think about themselves and their own lives?
I think that, you know, the funny thing about being a freshman is you think you've done it once and then you're done doing it. So one of the things I tell my students is like, okay, you're going to be a freshman probably about 10 more times before you die. You're going to start a new job. You're going to move into a new place. You're going to be holding your first child. And, you know, you're really a freshman then because, you know, you're faced with something. So that idea of stepping into the unknown and with all that uncertainty is something that they know they're going to have to step into over and over again. That's sort of how it works. But I think the way that I see my students change is they become more confident. They become more self-assured. Again, another of the theories that we talk about a lot in my classes is Carl Jung's theory of the shadow. And it has to do with the part of myself I'm really uncomfortable with, because it's how I kept myself safe as a child. For example, a lot of the kids in my class, they're very polite. You know, they were taught to be polite, you know. So if their grandfather said, hey, I heard there's a colony on Mars, they'd go, sure, Grandpa, exactly. You know, because they don't want to be impolite, and they've been taught to be polite. But what they put in shadow is their ability to tell the truth. And I say, okay, so you're really polite. And I'm like, can you tell somebody something they don't want to hear? And suddenly they kind of freeze. You know, how do you tell your boss or an authority figure something that they don't want to hear? How do you ask for a raise? How do you stand your ground? And suddenly they realize that this part of themselves isn't very developed. The same thing, a lot of us were raised to be very helpful. And, you know, and if people are working in our house, then we can't just sit around. We got to, like, jump in and help. But then these same folks never ask for help. You know, so again, they're like, no, I don't want to be a burden. And they also don't know how to say no. They're always doing favors that they know they shouldn't do. They know they don't have time to do. So their ability to stand their ground and to hold a boundary has been put in shadow. Now, when these kids start to realize that their strengths also come with challenges, and they work on those challenges, like the kid that's really helpful learns how to say no and then not get herself burned out. The kid that's really polite learns how to speak his truth, and now suddenly he's more honest with people. When they are able to develop those parts of themselves they need for adulthood, because, you know, honestly, we have to be polite and truthful if we're going to be adults. It's not going to work if we're just one or the other. We'll be a doormat. If I'm helping everybody else out to the point where I'm burned out, then I'm no good to anybody. So once they sort of realize they have these challenges and these strengths that go hand in hand, and they realize it's not that hard to start working on them, then I see this confidence come to them, and I see all that freshman anxiety start to die down, and they take on challenges that they didn't think that they could do, and they excel at them. I learn something from my students every year, you know, because we do a lot of talking in the classes. They come up with points of view that I wouldn't have considered. Like, they'll take an idea somewhere that I hadn't thought about before, and I'll think, that's really, you know, great. We do a lot of communication skills. So, like, one of my favorite student-devised strategies is what she calls the difficult favor. And it's when somebody who's kind of bossy and kind of pushy, and they're always, you ask them for a favor. So she was with Thanksgiving, and her aunt was bossing everybody around, and she goes, Aunt Merilda, can you grab me that pan? And her aunt was like, okay. And then she asked her a couple more favors, and then after that, she wasn't so intimidated. You know, it's like the other thing, always do a favor for your rivals. And give your rivals a big, fat, juicy compliment, because if nothing else, it throws them off. Now they're not quite sure how to take you. So we try to come up with these different strategies of dealing with challenging people and to understand the part of myself, right, the part of ourselves that helped us stay safe as children, but now it's becoming an obstacle to adulthood. And when I see kids get that, that's where they really start to flourish.
You mentioned that it's important for students to learn how to use their strengths and speak their truth.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's also important for students not in the communications department to take classes sort of like this and to learn how to better themselves for their own future jobs?
I think so. I think that, you know, if you're going to work with people in any sense of the word, you need to learn how to communicate. If you're going to be married to somebody, it's important to know how to have a healthy conflict, how to confront somebody skillfully, how to take criticism skillfully. So I really do, and I find that students will get back to me on online media and social media after they graduated and got married and had kids, and they're telling me that they're still using the things that they've learned. So that's really encouraging.
So if we want to take this to a bigger societal level,
mm-hmm.
obviously right now in America we have a lot of issues.
Mm-hmm.
And as Americans, do we struggle in communicating with each other? And in that struggle, is that how we see protests and movements like the Black Lives Matter movements or the NFL players taking a knee?
Mm-hmm.
Is that a direct relation to how we communicate with each other?
Well, I think that it's a way that we communicate with each other. I think that one of the challenges of talking about politics is that it's such an emotional issue, and that most people come at it emotionally. It's difficult to say, this is something I believe really strongly, and then for someone to present evidence contending that, that's contrary to that. A lot of times folks don't want to hear it. Like, we call this cognitive dissonance. Like, if I already said I believe in something, I already believe in it. And it's going to be very difficult to change my mind. When you have black and white thinking, and I think you have this on both sides, you have people that just say, no, they're wrong. It doesn't matter what they say. I don't care what I hear. They're wrong. It doesn't matter. I think that what you're seeing there are folks that have a real problem with uncertainty. And so uncertainty makes them feel very anxious. And so they're not, that's one of the reasons why sometimes people's opinions just seem so ironclad. You can give them all of the evidence, all of the reason and logic that you want, but it will make them anxious to consider the other side of this. And so they're clinging to this, they're holding on to this out of a sense of anxiety, not so much out of a sense of wanting to know the truth, but wanting to feel certain about what they think is the truth. And I think that's a really big problem right now that we have.
Today with Campus Voices, we're sitting down with Professor Steve Mortensen, who is an interpersonal communications professor here at the University of Delaware. You've also hosted workshops with Professor Bartu, the Comm Chats. Mm-hmm. Would you like to talk a little bit about those?
We were asked by different students who were having trouble talking politics with their family or with their friends. They felt attacked by what they thought, what they believed in. They would go home and get bullied by people politically, and they wanted to know, like, you know, how can I have a meaningful discussion? But they still wanted to hear, like, well, I want to understand what the other side thinks, and I want to understand what someone who believes something different than I do thinks. And so we had this workshop about, all right, let's talk about how to talk about politics. And one of the things that we touched on was what I mentioned earlier. Politics is more emotional than intellectual. They're holding on to their position so tightly because it's the anxiety of uncertainty that they don't want to deal with. Like, their person can't be wrong. That just can't be the way it is. It has to be the way it is. Otherwise, it makes them very anxious. And so to know that going in is to realize that, all right, I'm probably not going to be able to change how this person feels. Because, again, I think a lot of politics is not so much about what we think, but what we feel. And so that's part of it. But one of the other things we asked is, okay, well, why do you want to have this conversation? You know, do you want to hear somebody else's point of view? Okay. Do you want to articulate your point of view? That makes sense. Do you want to change somebody else's mind? That's not a good idea. You know, do you want to defend your point of view? Probably not that much of a good idea either. You know, so it's like, why do you even want to have this? Another thing we might ask is, like, well, where do you get your information from? And is it, how bipartisan is your information? I would personally say that especially when it comes to national news, you might be better off reading about it than hearing it. Because when it comes through, again, television is about emotion. It's about images that move us. And so I think a lot of, when we're looking at especially national news, not so much local news, local television broadcast news is about what happened in the city that day. But a lot of national news is really about opinions. You know, when I was growing up in the late Jurassic period and news would come on the television, every once in a while, the station manager would get on and say, this is an editorial. And there'd be a big sign, this is an editorial. This is not journalism. This is not facts. These are opinions. And that's what they used to do on the TV news. They don't do that anymore. You can't tell where the editorial starts, where the facts end. Now, in newspapers, they still have the editorial page. So they still make that distinction. So I think that if you're looking for more facts, you're probably better off reading about it. Now, if I'm really interested in a story and I kind of want, you know, I want to know, like, okay, what's the real story? I'm not interested in the spin. I might want to read it in a couple different papers. I might want to read it in the New York Times and in the Wall Street Journal. Right, I might want to look at it, read it from a paper that leans a little bit to the left and to the right, see what they have in common, and then say, okay, that's probably the story. And the rest of this ends up being spin. So I would ask people as well, you know, if you're reading really partisan stuff or getting really partisan information, and then you want to go take that into a political discussion with somebody who believes differently than you, that's probably not going to be a very fruitful discussion.
And like you said, a lot of these political conversations are emotional.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, there's a lot of emotions to deal with.
There's a lot.
A lot. And a lot of those are very distressing. And in your classes, you do talk about coping with distress.
Mm-hmm.
What advice would you give people who are feeling that distress from seeing the news and want to feel better at the end of the day?
Yeah. I think that this is something that everybody that I know has to practice in certain ways. Sometimes you need to know when to take a break from the whole thing. When it's time to give yourself 2 or 3 days when you say, okay, I'm really not going to go on social media because everybody's in my social media feeds angry at each other. I'm going to give the newspapers a break. I'm going to give the television a break. I might even give Stephen Colbert a break. You know, it's like sometimes it's only so funny. And so I might need to take a break from that and remember that I have to focus on the things that I can do something about. You know, if I'm going to do something about an issue, if I'm going to go protest, if I'm going to go walk, if I'm going to go write my congressman, then I'll go do that. But if I'm going to make sure I'm going to get my kids to school on time and get to my classes and be focused for that, that's what I'm going to focus on. So sometimes it's important just to take a break from it. I think it's important, too, to take a break from certain people, like if they just want to bully about something. One of my favorite phrases when I'm with family and there's political discussions and they start getting hot, I'll just say something like, why don't we all just be family instead of being right? Let's take a break from being right. Let's just be family. Like, let's just hang out. Let's just be friends for a while. Let's try not to be right. You know, I've had people that want to sort of impress their point of view on me in kind of an aggressive way. And I'll just call them out and say, you know, this conversation isn't doing anything for our relationship. And you're not going to change my mind, and I'm not going to change your mind, and nothing's going to happen here. So if you really want to do something, if you're really passionate about something, go and get involved in politics. You know, go do something about it. Same thing with the sky is falling type of person. Oh, my gosh, we're all going to die now. North Korea's going to bomb us right now. And it's the same thing. It's like, all right, why don't you focus on what you can do something about, right? Or go do something about that. Go call, like, talking about it and getting wound up about it doesn't change anything. So I think sometimes it's taking a break from media. It's taking a break from people that are just too caught up in politics. Or it might just be calling somebody out and saying, let's just change the subject here. You know, let's just have a good time for a while. It's stressful, though, and it's hard. It is. It is.
Today with Campus Voices, we're sitting down with Steve Mortensen, an interpersonal communications professor. What are some of the classes you teach to students here? I know you teach the intro class for comm students, but besides that?
Besides that, yeah, that's the big theory class. I teach a class in emotion and communication where we look at how to better express and talk about our own feelings, but then also how to help other people talk about their feelings. A lot of that class has to do, believe it or not, with talking to yourself. Where, you know, maybe I'm walking into a job interview and suddenly my stomach's in knots. And so I need to talk back to my fear. You know, my fear is going, they're going to think you're stupid. You're probably not going to get this job. And it might be like, you know what, just relax. I know what I'm doing. Just calm down. So some of us talking to ourselves. Another one that I've been teaching is leadership, communication for effective leadership. And that's been a really great class because it's got me involved with the Blue Hen Leadership Program on this campus, and so many of the students in my classes are natural leaders anyway. They're the heads of their clubs, you know, they're starting small businesses, and, you know, exactly, right, like these guys here. And so it's to help give them that really specific sort of theory and content in those professional moments, you know, that's really satisfying too.
In the communications department, after students are a comm interest student, they can either become an interpersonal communications major or a media communications major.
Yes.
And typically more students lean towards the media communications than interpersonal. Do you think there's a reason for that?
I think people are so familiar with media. They've been watching television. They've been growing up on social media. They look at that and they think, you know, I want a job in television. I want a job in some aspect of that. What's really interesting is that in addition to interpersonal and mass media, we have a public relations track. And that has a lot to do with professional training, how to write a press release, how to do a brand analysis. And it seems that a lot of our students go into PR. So a lot of the interpersonal kids go into PR. And these are the folks that do event planning. They want to do face-to-face things. They want to do like charity events. And a lot of them end up working for nonprofit organizations. The folks that go into the mass media end of it and PR, they end up doing more corporate PR, doing more client work and things like that. So it's interesting. Now, on the other side of the interpersonal, we have a lot of people going into therapy. We have a lot of people that going into education and teaching, going into social work. It's interesting that in the last 5 or 6 years, we've had an increase in the number of interpersonal people, which is encouraging. But, you know, most people, when you say, well, what's interpersonal communication, they're not even quite sure. And when you say, well, I have a degree in that, then they're really not sure. Well, what do you even do with that? You know, and I just say, look, the interpersonal kids get their degree so they can go rule the world. That's my that's my response. But a quick definition just basically is interpersonal communication has to do with individual to individual talking to each other. You know, it's the kind of communication we have when we're eyeball to eyeball.
Well, if I knew if I was on the interpersonal track, I would rule the world. I would have done that instead of media.
Exactly. See?
So as we're close to the end here, what would be that one solid nugget of advice or something that can help them become better interpersonal communicators themselves?
Okay. Yeah, this is my little aphorism. It's better to be interested than interesting. Listen to people. Right. Listen to people, hear their stories, encourage them to talk, and they'll appreciate you much more than if you're trying to be so interesting with your story and talking over them.
Thank you so much, Professor Steve Mortensen from the Comm Department. Great chat with you.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely, you guys. It was great.
Thanks for listening to Campus Voices. The views expressed on this program are those of the individual participants and do not necessarily reflect the official views of WVUD or the University of Delaware. For more information about Campus Voices and to find archived episodes, visit our website, www.udel.edu/campusvoices. We invite you to tune in every Thursday morning at 8:30 for Campus Voices on 91.3 FM. WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark, or online at WVUD.org.